2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host from the Great White North, former NFBC main event co-champion, Dylan White. Dylan, we are joined by another one of our colleagues from Baseball America today, Jacob Rudner, one of our college writers here at Baseball America. He is also an avid fantasy player. Somebody knows what he's talking about when it comes to the MLB draft. So we're diving more into the FYPD this week. So Dylan, stealing your shine for a second, we're going to welcome Jacob into the show. Jacob Rudner, how's it going, man? How are you?
Wow, I'm honored, Dylan. I'm sorry to steal your thunder, but no, this is cool. I am a longtime listener of the show, so I'm honored to be a part of it and excited to talk about some new pros.
Yeah, absolutely. So draft went down, Dylan. Anything you want to talk before we jump into FYPD? I think you were looking to gloat further on your first place Blue Jays, their current run of success at home. Floor is yours, sir.
No, that's all I wanted to say. It's game three of the three-game set. Yankees are booting the ball, kicking it around, which I love to see. And I think Jays are winning 8-4 in the eighth right now, so we'll be up four games. We, meaning me and the Jays.
I hope before the end of this podcast they close it out and it's in your favor, so that way this opening doesn't come back to bite you, especially with the Yankees fans. You got to be careful, man. You don't want to feed the animals, you know? All right. So let's jump into it a little bit. Obviously, the draft went down a little bit over a week ago now, almost 2 weeks. Most of these guys have signed. There's still a few out there. I'm pretty certain that everybody in the first round is probably going to sign. I guess Slater to Brun, is that the one that we got our eyes on at the moment that could potentially go to campus? He ranks fairly highly in my FYPD and is technically a first rounder, though he went in the competitive balance round at 37. So kind of an unusual first rounder, right? We don't see that in other sports. All right, let's start it right from the top. I got myself, at least, I've shared this list with Dylan. I've shared it with Jacob. I think before we even get into the ranking, right, it's probably good to preface all this by saying this is a very muddled top of the class. I feel like we've heard this ad nauseum. It's almost cliche at this point. There is no clear-cut number one player. And I would venture to say that you could say there's maybe no like elite players in this draft. That doesn't mean that there aren't very good players who, like, there's a bunch of them that are going to rank as top 100 prospects, and there's a chance for them to kind of exceed their draft pedigree. I don't know how many of these guys, and I'll pose this to Jacob, how many of these players that went in the top 10 this year would have gone in the top 10 last year before the show we kind of reviewed a little bit? It's a loaded top 10 last year.
Yeah, it really is. I think that there are a couple. Cade Anderson, for me, certainly would have been a top 10 pick. Ivar Arquette, I think, would have been maybe closer to the fringe last year, maybe in, but probably still on that back line. Ethan Holliday probably gets in, and then like it opens up pretty significantly. Seth Hernandez, I think, probably would have had a chance last year. Eli Willis, but the answer is really a couple. And of the ones I'm certain, maybe three, Cade Anderson, Arquette, and Doyle are the ones I'd be most confident in being top 10 picks last year.
Yeah, I think that kind of answers the question, right? Like, and there were other guys outside of the top 10 that maybe should have been top 10 picks last year too. I think, like, obviously there's a name like Seaver King right around there that a lot of these guys probably would have gone ahead of. But, you know, that's just one pick. But overall, yeah, I think I tend to agree with that. And I think he kind of named like our top four in terms of how I've ranked this out. I have Cade Anderson as my number one in the class. I think there is a reasonable case for Liam Doyle. I think there's probably a reasonable case for Ethan Holliday. And there's a reasonable case for Ivar Arquette. When you just consider the overall package in terms of the skills that he has. I think I had one hitting coordinator that, you know, a lot of those guys get roped in watching video, big draft decisions, etc. Team that didn't take Arquette, but that viewed Arquette as the best overall hitter in the draft. And I think if you look at the data, biggest question with him is like, he could swing a little bit more in the zone. It's not like terrible aggression, but like the heart swing, I think was like maybe just a little under 70%, if I recall. But gets on base, hits the ball hard, makes good contact in the zone, really good angles as well. If he doesn't stick at shortstop, he's playing with a really good shortstop defensively and probably is one of the better defensive third basemen in baseball. So I have a pretty high opinion on Arquette as well. And I think that there might even be a little more projection there. You know, as he continues to, he's never going to be like a huge hulking guy. He's kind of a tall string bean kind of a build. But he's athletic and twitchy, moves well. I think there could be a little more strength that gets onto that body as he matures. So I really like him. And then Liam Doyle, who I think is probably Jacob's number one in the class. My one case for Anderson on this, the team fit. There was already a case that Anderson was the most ready-made player for the big leagues in the draft this year. Was obviously phenomenal down the stretch with LSU, really just throughout the season, and you know, was their ace. Has pitched in big games. We know that he can get deep into starts. He's got a developed arsenal. He throws strikes. And the one thing the Mariners have done is they've taken these advanced strike throwers, pitch ability guys with above average stuff from college, Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Bryce Miller, some of these others, Brian Wu, who didn't, like Miller, didn't necessarily have the pedigree of Kirby or Gilbert. But they bring those guys in and they boost up the stuff without sacrificing any of that strike throwing or ability to kind of zone pitches. If anything, they add a lot of bridge pitches, et cetera, on or clean up grips and make pitches better. I feel like Anderson could be a monster like within a year. And it's unusual to take a college pitcher number one in an FYPD, but I just think he offers the most safety with upside. So I don't know what your thoughts are, Jacob. I know you're a big Liam Doyle fan. I do like Doyle quite a bit. I just don't think the fit is as good as going to one of the best pitching dev houses in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with that. It's hard to argue with the fit plus the player, and I think that that's where your point is the strongest for me. I like Liam Doyle a lot just because we're talking about a lefty who's going to ascend quickly. Like, there's not a lot that we don't know about Liam Doyle at this point. It's the best or tied for the best with Gage Wood fastball in this class for me. The difference with him is that it comes from the left side. We saw it work extraordinarily well in the toughest conference in college baseball, which lately has a track record of ascending its players to the major league level very rapidly. Is the fit as good? No, and I don't think anybody's fit would have been better than being a pitcher with the Mariners. But for somebody who I think is very talented, has a pitch that you really can't teach, and then maybe some low-hanging fruit stuff that even a non-Mariners team is going to be able to clean up, I have a hard time looking past Liam Doyle, but I also think that the conversation centers very closely around the guys who you said, and Kate Anderson is one of them.
Yeah. And I think you're right on Doyle. Let's talk a little bit on him and we'll dive in a little bit to Arquette, because I think it's good to spend some time up here at the top and going through reasoning and, you know, maybe some other perspectives. Doyle's fastball is elite. As you said, I think it is the best fastball in the draft. When you talk about release characteristics, obviously left-handed and its lower release height, really good vertical approach angle. There's velocity on it. And he spots it, frankly. You know, it's not scattershot command with that pitch. I think one of the reasons that he was so successful in the hardest conference in college baseball, throwing his fastball 70%+ of the time, was because he commands it and it has all those traits. It's just such an outlier pitch, which is a really great foundation for any starter, as you mentioned, regardless of any organization. I think where the legitimate questions come into play, the splitter is a pretty good pitch, but it's a chase pitch. It's not a zone miss kind of pitch. He's got the cutter. There's been some development this year with that. Still has the slider. I think he flashes a curveball from time to time as well, but doesn't throw it very often. And I think it's for me, just based on recent history, the answer to this question is probably an overwhelming yes for you. But do you think there is a above average, not an but an above average breaking ball that he's going to be able to develop that's going to miss bats in zone consistently? Because I think that's the biggest question mark with Doyle. And obviously as a lefty, a little bit less of a question, but still a question.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't have a ton of confidence that he'll get to something that's like consistently above average. I think his slider has a chance to be a decent pitch. You mentioned the cutter shape. I think that they can blend together a little bit, but he was able to use that pitch as somewhat of a slider, if you want to call it that, this season, and it looked good at times when he's commanding it well. Could that be something? Maybe. I'm more confident that he's going to be able to develop enough from a secondary standpoint that it's going to allow the fastball to not be a 70% of the time pitch for him at the next level. And it will be enough from a secondary standpoint that he will be able to continue to be this guy who plays largely behind this unique fastball shape and does enough of everything else to kind of keep that momentum going.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's not like he doesn't have any feel for spin at all. Like we see some guys like that, that are like fastball dominant, you know, pronation dominant guys that just can't supinate at all. And they have like 1900 RPM sliders. Like he's not one of those guys. Like there is some spin traits in there that I think with the right organization, and it might even be work that's done outside the organization in season in the off season where they kind of figure out that pitch. And he's an intense competitive dude. Like I think at worst you're looking at like an all-star closer. Like I don't think it's like high leverage. I wouldn't even put that label on it, cause I think that would be easy for him probably now. I think if like he ends up in the bullpen, he's going to be like a hater. Like, you know, he's going to be one of the best relievers in baseball kind of a thing. So that's a 60. That's still a really valuable player. Maybe isn't what you want to hear from a fantasy perspective, but what you really don't want to hear from a fantasy perspective is guys not making the big leagues or having much of a career. And that sometimes happens in FYPD. Let's not be fools. All right. I don't know. Dylan, do you have anything you wanted to add on any of these top two pitchers here in Doyle and Anderson?
I mean, all season I was kind of tracking the college performance and doing like a robo scout version of it. And Doyle and Anderson were the top guys basically all season. And then when we got the stuff data, like the metrics to calculate stuff, like it was supported by the underlying. So I have no arguments with either of those two. I think the Seattle factor, we kind of talked about it last week, is pretty big. The park factors are huge, like let alone like their pitching development and how they seem to churn out these guys. But just playing in Seattle, the park factors is like 30% run prevention. So half of his games will be there, obviously. And that's a huge factor. It's kind of like the Ethan Holiday Coors factor. So I like those two. Pick your poison. Which guy do you want? Sophie's choice, whatever your binary choice metaphor is. And you'll do fine.
There we go. Number two, I actually had Ava Arquette, so I have them split. Arquette is the meat in the left-handed college pitcher sandwich. Jacob, what's your take on Arquette? I kind of waxed poetic already on him. I just think it's one of the few kind of sure type of things in this class among the hitters, because I don't even think they're sure things with a lot of these high school guys who are talented, of course.
No, and with Arquette, I think, like you said already, and there's no need for me to like deeply reiterate it here, but it's another guy where we kind of know what he is. I think the biggest questions with Arquette are on the defensive side. Offensively speaking, he makes loud contact. He's a big, you know, long swinger. I think he's going to be able to hit for power, and he realizes that in game frequently. He did it at Oregon State. The thing that you mentioned that also kind of concerns me is he needs to be a little bit more aggressive at times. But that's coachable, as we talked about off the air, you and I, several times. So yeah, I think that this is a guy who maybe has an outside chance of playing shortstop. He's athletic. He's a good third baseman, probably at worst. And I thought it was a good pick by the Marlins in a draft that I will give a shout out and say I thought was pretty good too.
Yeah. 100% agree. I think he also is in a really good situation. Now, Miami probably is going to kill his projections a little bit, Dylan, but I do think the positive here is there's not a whole lot in his way. Whether he goes to shortstop or third base, there's no one really stopping him from, you know, rocketing up to the major leagues and getting a lot of playing time. Which it's not going to be like angels quick, but if he's playing in Miami right now, a year from today, I'd say it's like a 10% shock factor. I don't think I'd be that shocked at all. If it might even be less than that, it might be 0%, Jacob. Like, I think he's a guy that could move pretty quick. And there's, like I said, it's not like the Miami has, you know, some standout shortstops and third basemen that are keeping their best prospect up from getting up there. And Jacob actually writes our Marlins list going forward. So he's got insight into the Marlins.
I was even going to say, you know, just even more broadly speaking, that organization is so unbelievably light on hitters in general that I think that it provides him a path. Like, forget who are the shortstops and who are the third basemen. Like, this is a guy who I'm reasonably confident is going to hit quickly. And that will, in and of itself, allow him to ascend in that organization at a breakneck pace. Probably not angels, like you said, but it also might not be that far off. Like, we really are talking about, like, the perfect match for somebody who is arguably the safest offensive player in this entire draft that was light in that category.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that he's good in the ways that you want someone to be good for fantasy, right? Where there's actualized power and already good angles, which shows barrel control, which I think is kind of the hidden element of the hit tool. Like, it's not just making contact and swinging at the right pitches. It's also like having that adjustability in your hands and the barrel to actually hit things at good angles. It doesn't always have to be like 18 to 30 degrees, right? It could be just like 10 to 30. Like, you're just in that range. It's pretty tight. And Arquette has that, right? Where, like you said, the biggest question mark is being a little more aggressive. I think that's really fixable. And I think that's really fixable once you get up to the higher levels and you start to have your 100, 200, 300 plate appearances and you start to see a variety of different pitches and pitch types and how guys attack you. Like, that's when those adjustments get made. But he's doing all the right things in terms of a swing perspective, swinging at the right pitches. And when he does swing, he attacks from the right angles, which I think is really positive. The other thing is there's enough speed that he could run a little bit. He's not going to be like a 20-20 guy. It's going to be more home runs than steals, but double-digit steals, I think, every season isn't crazy, especially early on. And with all the other stuff that he provides, I think that's kind of a valuable player. And the defense is, maybe he's not a shortstop long-term, but it's good enough that he's going to play a position. He's athletic enough. So that's all good stuff. Moving on to the next tier, kind of from 4 to 9 here, this is where we start to have, I'll say, the first group of high school players. Because there's a lot for me in terms of how I rank this out. I think this is a weaker draft. It's a weaker draft for college hitters. There's a lot of good college lefties. College righties, like, I think you can kind of get some value picks. I don't think you have to draft a lot of those college right-handers early. I think going after the high school parentheses here, shortstops, because a lot of these guys will probably not play shortstop for very long, if at all, as professionals. This is where it gets really, really interesting. That's a big market tease. I'm going to go to a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about some of the high school shortstops.
Whenever we need to hire someone at Baseball America, we know who we need. Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Why do we use Indeed at Baseball America? Because it gets our position in front of qualified candidates. And it also allows us to do everything we need to make a hire all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts. You only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In this minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/baseballamerica. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now. And by doing so, you're supporting our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on our podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need. Did you know your calendar age doesn't always match how old your body truly is? It's true. Your biological age, the age of your cells and organs, is actually the number one predictor of your risk for serious diseases like heart disease, cancer, dementia, and more. That's why learning your biological age can be truly life-changing. And that's exactly what the True Age Test from True Diagnostic helps you do. With just a simple at-home test, you can uncover your true biological age and get personalized insights into your true biological age and take control of your health like never before. No doctor's visits, no labs, just a quick finger prick from the comfort of your home. I recently ordered the test myself because I really wanted to get a clearer picture of my long-term health. It was eye-opening to learn that if your biological age is just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk for major diseases can go up by 30 to 50%. That's a huge wake-up call for me. But here's the good news, and this is the part that really inspired me. Up to 90% of biological aging is driven by lifestyle. That means the way we eat, move, sleep, and manage stress plays a massive role in how fast or slow our bodies age. True Diagnostic doesn't just tell you your biological age. It gives you a personalized report full of clear, science-backed steps you can take to actually slow down aging and improve your health over time. I'm really excited to see what our results will say and what I can do differently to better support my body as I age. It may be I'm adjusting my sleep. It may be changing supplements. It may be making smarter food choices or exercising more. It feels empowering to know that aging isn't just something that happens. It's something that we have control of. The test itself is super easy. Just a quick, painless finger prick. You send in your sample using a prepaid mailer, and in 2 to 3 weeks, you get a detailed online report with actionable insights that you can use. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code BASEBALL to get 20% off your entire order of subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use BASEBALL at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
All right, and we are back. We're talking 2025 draft, FYPD, first year player drafts. For those that are unaware, that's their dynasty league when they make all the draftees available. It could be after the draft. It could be the following December, January, February. I've had them as late as March, depending upon the league. I've had them as early as July, depending on the league. So it all depends. We're trying to get the information out as quick as possible. So this is the earliest I think we've done an FYPD. But let's go into some of these high school shortstops. Jacob is well-versed in these players, despite them not ever stepping on an SEC or an ACC or a Big West field, Big Ten, doesn't matter. Jacob knows his ball. Let's talk through some of these guys. You're a big fan of Ethan Holiday, who is my first high school player ranked. I think it's reasonable if you are picking in the top four, you want to take them one, two, or three. I got no arguments, no qualms with that. Number four, Ethan Holiday. Lands in Colorado. Father is obviously a famous all-time Rocky. He's a different player, though, than Jackson is. It's not a hit tool and speed kind of guy. Probably not a middle infielder. Probably more like a third baseman. Could even move over to first base eventually. It's all about the power and the on-base ability with, say, average hit tool. There's some whiff in there for sure. But you're looking for a 30-homer bat here, Jacob, are you not?
You certainly are. And if I could just like remove my amateur reporter hat for a second and be fan of fantasy baseball for a second, I actually really like Ethan Holiday as a top three pick in an FYPD. And maybe that's a little bit aggressive, but at the same time, like Jeff said a couple minutes ago, it's not always the most comfy decision to go with a starting pitcher, a college pitcher, with your first or second overall pick. And I think that Ethan Holiday has a lot of traits that marry well from a fantasy perspective. And we talked about the fit with somebody like Kate Anderson in Seattle. I think that a lot of those same things apply for Ethan Holiday in Colorado. We're talking about somebody who has plus power. He's a good hitter. Is he going to be a shortstop? Like Jeff said, maybe, probably not. But I do think that he can ascend the ladder quickly in that organization, which is also maybe on the lighter side and kind of lends itself to fast tracks. And then you put this guy with his power, you know, in that situation. And I think that the ballpark really favors him and makes him a very intriguing FYPD pick. Just if you're going to projected out over what could happen here over the next couple of years. Am I crazy?
No, I think the only thing that I'm maybe in disagreement with is they don't fast track guys. Like, it's possible, like, Amador was kind of out of nowhere last year, and I think some of it was because he was a Latin guy who gets signed at a certain age, and they're on the 40-man probably a year or two early. Like, they should probably fix that rule. Because a lot of those guys end up having to be added to the 40-man before they're ready. Outside of that, they kind of take their time with players. And it wouldn't shock me if he's got at least two full years in the minors, if not three. Like, I think.
But is that worth waiting for? Isn't that worth waiting for?
It could be. I think my thing is with Holiday, why I don't have him above the two really good college pitchers and then Arquette, is he doesn't have those supporting skills. He's not going to run. It's probably not going to be. There's a chance it's not a batting average drain, but it could be. And there's a better chance it's a drain than it is a boost. I do think he's going to be better in OBP formats, but I do think he's more of like ultimately like a three true outcome corner in infield type, which is fine. But it's like there's a lot of pressure on the bat, especially if he doesn't end up at third. It's a lot of pressure on the bat to perform. I have him four, and I like to draft within this tier. I have Ethan Holiday on certain teams, so I'm certainly not. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate in terms of like what the negatives might be as well. He wasn't as much of a slam dunk as I had anticipated he would be a year ago. I'll say that. And I think that that's probably true for everybody across the board that was doing any kind of draft rankings this year, that there was a little shine that was off, you know, off the rose with Holiday.
I think you're going to have a bunch of believers, the name value, Coors. I think people are going to take them. So I don't think he's going to slide past four. Maybe in terms of actual value he's going to give you, then maybe this is probably the right spot. But yeah, I mean, Coors forgives a lot of sins in the BABIP department, like Brenton Doyle, Hunter Goodman. They all had seasons where they hit like 270, 280 so far. And so you're right. He probably won't be a batting average sink. So it forgives a lot of sins, name value, Coors. People are going to like him. So I think I don't have a problem taking him up high.
They don't trade players either. Yeah, I mean, I can absolutely see it. I think some of it depends on your format too. Like if you're playing a 30-team league, I'm taking Anderson and Doyle all day long because pitching is so hard and you don't have the depth of like available starters that you have in a 12 or a 15-team league. And it, depending upon the league setup, if they're like a league like one of mine where I can kind of move back and forth like prospect starters until they hit like 100 innings. I have a few leagues like this. So like I can expand my roster and like I have guys who are stashed in my minors that I can call up for a start and I maybe swap out like another minor league reliever or guy that's like, you know, has minors eligibility that's a major league reliever. And I'm just like swapping those guys back and forth. So I think in like leagues like that, deeper leagues, they probably have more value. We're talking like a 12 team league. That's a standard scoring or category head to head, not points head to head, where once again, the college pitchers would go one and two. I think Holiday makes a lot of sense. Like a shout, like a 12 to 15 team roto league going Holiday one. I don't really have an issue with it. Cause I think you have to shoot for like clearly have to shoot for upside there because you have the ability to drop anybody. Right. And add probably a decent prospect off the wire. Cause you, there's maybe under 200 prospects rostered, right? So those gauge jumps and all those kind of guys, even some of the late first rounders were probably available late in April in leagues like that. So I do think like a lot of this always depends on your league context, you know, and that's why we talk through it. All right, we want to move on to the next one. This is the big shocking jaw-dropping ranking in the top 10 for me. But I have justification and I have good reasoning for why that's the case. I have Steele Hall at five. Dude, you could probably talk me into putting Steele Hall at four. He is a reclass, just like Eli Willett's the number one pick is, who you probably have noticed we haven't spoken about yet. We will get to him before the end of the show. So not as young as Willett's, but still like would have been part of the 2026 high school class. He's one of the best athletic testers. Not a huge guy, but his power output and projection is really good. He's a plus-plus runner. The comps I've gotten from scouts in the industry, evaluators that get paid by teams, sometimes roles are different, is that Steele Hall is Trey Turner. That's a really exciting player. I think that's the one guy that we've talked about so far and may talk about today that has like first round fantasy upside. And a lot of those first round fantasy upside guys don't necessarily go 1 through 5. Went 9th overall. You know, if he does end up playing for the Reds and ends up in that ballpark and that factors into your projections, might be a better place to play than Coors, especially if you have some power questions. So the angles are really good. The EVs were actually pretty good. The question with Hall is there's still some growth that needs to happen in terms of the skills. Alabama prep, not crazy competition he's facing. This is a guy, you know, with, we talked about this last week, Dylan, but this is a guy with the amount of time that teams have now post-draft, now that the complex leagues are ending, you know, in a couple of weeks, a week, you know, and change. And the fact that they have sort of closed door bridge league stuff that's almost like backfield play. It's kind of very unorganized. It's not, you know, they roll innings. They can, it's a development environment, right? Off-season hitting camps, maybe they're gone home for a month, then they're back October, November, December, whenever they have their off-season hitting camps. I believe the minor league shutdown no longer exists any longer either. So these guys can now be at the complexes all throughout the off-season if they want. And then these guys are back in hitting camps in January or early February, especially the new draftees and the young guys. They're getting back into camp a little bit earlier. The teams have like 5 or 6 touch points on these guys before they're ever coming into in and playing actual official games, you know? And even beyond that, you have pretty much this period all the way to like mid to the end of March when they start to play minor league backfield games before they're even playing like games anyone's really going to see or pay any attention to. So there's a lot of stuff you can work on. And I think like Connor Griffin, excellent athlete, right in line with what Steele Hall is, a bigger frame, but another guy, you know, Mississippi and, you know, they reworked his swing and it he's turned into, he's going to be the number one prospect in baseball probably by Friday. You know, Roman Anthony's about to graduate and he's right behind him. And that's not going to change. I can tell you that. I don't know. I don't know if anyone else has opinions on Hall. You will get some more negative opinions on Hall from other people besides me, obviously. Anything, Jacob, Dylan, they're pointing at each other, trying to figure it out. There, like, I don't know. I haven't watched a lot of Steele Hall.
Spider-Man.
Elite name, though.
No, I mean, yeah, yes, elite name. That is true. But he is interesting, and you have actually been banging the drum on the Steele Hall train basically the entire year, so I kind of just default to you as the Steele Hall expert. The competition he does play is light. That's the only thing for me that I think, like, and maybe this is going to broaden up the conversation here too much, but as somebody who tries to make considerations when I'm making draft picks, and I'm not the expert that you guys are in fantasy, I always wonder, am I forfeiting value to a degree with how fast some guys are going to get up by taking somebody who might take longer to develop? And that maybe that's not necessarily to say that that's going to be the case with Steele Hall specifically, but I guess for somebody who is younger, somewhat undersized, hasn't really played a lot of great competition, is that a profile that might take longer to be productive for my fantasy team? And is that a bad thing, I guess, is the you know, very unsophisticated way to put it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a like for like with Griffin, but I think a lot of people probably took Christian Moore last year over Connor Griffin or Bryce Rainer. You know, both guys who tested pretty well and had upside, but no, you know, one of them obviously didn't face a whole lot of high level competition. Certainly not Rainer, who played at one of the top high schools in the country, playing some of the top high school competition in the country. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think in a draft like this, yeah, it's risky. There are a lot of people that will probably have Steel Hall ranked 20. And I'm totally fine with that being the case because I'll get him at 12. You know, I don't know. I think more often than not, the college hitters have been busts in the top 10 over the last 10 years or so. There's only a handful of guys who have really returned value. And I think the high school guys, by and large, tend to return pretty good value. You know, I don't think it's Benny Montgomery. I don't think it's the kind of thing where he can't hit at all. I think it's the type of gains that typically can get made just with swing coaches and that sort of stuff. I believe in the dev environments a lot more now, post-pandemic, and the things that we've seen with teams when they have time to actually develop these guys behind the scenes. They go a little further.
Yeah, I think you know, if you want upside, he's quite young. Like, he's just a little older than Willits, like you said. He's like a 70 runner, good athlete. He's got the high upside, like you said. Round one upside. So in a shallow league, I think you want to shoot for upside. So like people who took the Walker Jenkins, Max Clark, Bryce Rayner, Connor Griffin's, like they're, I don't think they're regretting any of those picks. He could be one of those. And if it doesn't pan out, if he can't hit anything, it's an easy drop in a shallow league. So I think you shoot for upside in a shallower league. In a deeper league, maybe you want proximity. Like I'm the type of guy that would take Christian Moore.
No, I think I've been that guy too. I just tend to regret it a lot more.
Yeah, you know? No, it's true. But with tools like RoboScout, you can find, you know, quickly replenish after if it doesn't come through. So that's why I kind of like proximity. But I like this pick. I mean, I don't really know the high school guys that much. So I defer to you guys. But, you know, everything you guys are saying, I like it.
Yeah, I think he's one of the more divisive players in the draft. Frankly, I think depending upon who you talk to, even people I trust, I've gotten he can't hit and I've gotten Trey Turner. Right. And I think it depends what you look at. And I think the context for this ranking for me is he has the best chance to hit for a decent average 20 home runs and steal like 40 bases. Like he has the best chance to be a fantasy first rounder, where I think so often we go after a lot of these hitters. College and high school, it's not just college guys that maybe have a little bit less upside. And then ultimately, it's like the Nick York conversation. Nick York looked like a great pick for a year and a half because he hit out of the draft. Everyone had him in top 30 lists, you know, for fantasy, real life, whatever. And then the bottom fell out and there was nothing else to balance the profile for him to tread water with and figure things out. And I think like that's where athleticism and twitch comes into it. The other part of it is, stealing bases is a huge boost. Having speed is a huge boost. Taking extra bases, it boosts your slugging percentage. Sometimes going to boost your batting average and on base percentage and you beat stuff out. You score more runs, right? Like all that sort of stuff does, I think, ultimately factor into why I have Hall here, because he can run. And I think that there is power projection. Even though he's undersized, like the outputs that I've seen in athletic testing kind of back that. And that's typically what those tests do. They show who's rotationally explosive. All right, let's move on to the next. We have two high school hitters in a row that I think are in the conversation for the best combination of hit tool and power. At six is JoJo Parker. At seven is Gavin Fine, who the Texas Rangers took. Parker's with the Blue Jays, so we know which side Dylan leans on this debate. I think the hit tool is just a little bit purer with Parker than it is with Fine. Fine might have more power projection. The conversations that I had around the draft and around this FYPD following the draft, model teams were all over Fine. And those that really value it in their drafting process, I know the Red Sox were certainly one. Of course, the Rangers were another. He was a guy that certain teams probably had in the top 10 that others maybe didn't, if they were a little bit more scout based in terms of where they make their day one picks. It's hit tool and power. I mean, it's kind of straightforward. What are your thoughts?
Well, I was just going to say that we can go right back to the point you just made about having a decent run tool and the value of that for from a fantasy perspective. And the edge goes to JoJo, if that's what we're going to measure out there. I mean, he's a pretty decent athlete, toolsy all around. Like, I don't think that there's one below average tool necessarily for JoJo Parker. It all kind of projects out pretty well. Whereas, not that there are concerns with Fien, but like, just overall less athletic, not as good a fielder. He is slower and just doesn't run necessarily as cleanly. He maybe has a better arm, and that's like one category where he has JoJo very clearly beat. But for me, actually, I think JoJo kind of takes the cake from a toolsy intrigue perspective.
Yeah, it's not huge tools. I don't know if JoJo's probably a second baseman. I don't think he's probably a shortstop. And I think people have to realize there's 30 shortstop jobs. And the best athletes in Venezuela and the Dominican Republic tend to play baseball, which doesn't necessarily happen in the United States. They have better shortstops. Like, it's so hard for a lot of these guys to stick at shortstop, even if they're good at shortstop throughout the minors. But yeah, I think that's the biggest question with JoJo is like, you probably move to second base. Maybe the power is only average. Mississippi high school competition. He's actually about the same age as Connor Griffin was at the time of the draft. I think he's 19. He's one of the older guys in the first round. So those are kind of the knocks there. I mentioned, is it Fien or Fine? Because I had multiple people say Fine to me.
I don't know.
I always heard it pronounced Fien. So
we can go with Fine.
That's fine. Come on. All right. I don't know. So, you know, that's the top seven there. We're getting a little bit into the high school guys. Seth Hernandez at 8 might be the most talented player in the draft. It's not just big velocity from a high school right-hander, which is scary, right? There is a pitch mix. Maybe the breaking balls or some debate. It's a good set. It's a really good changeup. And it's pitchability. It's pitchability and power. I'm totally not always in on drafting high school guys. In this draft at this point, I kind of feel like he has as much upside as anybody else in the draft. Now, I can understand why people might pass on it at this point. I think this is probably the closest high school on, at least in the top 10 that we've had, to probably Hunter Green. In terms of what he can do, I don't think he's going to be Hunter Green. But be a pretty good starter. I think team context here matters as well. The Pirates have been good with pitching development. They don't do a whole lot else well. They do develop pitchers pretty well.
He's awfully intriguing. I mean, we're talking about triple-digit velocity. I've talked to some people who would put the fastball in the 7 category, which I think is a little rich for me, but it is something that I've heard multiple times. The same has been said for his changeup. He has, a good slider, a good curveball. He's got good feel for all 4 of those pitches. The control is average at worst, in my opinion, right now. So, yeah, I mean, he is an advanced player who draws comparisons to the people who, have very rarely fallen into that category. You mentioned Hunter Green. I think that like Jackson Jobe is in the same, air as what Seth Hernandez has a chance to be. Bubba Chandler, who is like, the blueprint right now. So yeah,
I think it's a really good situation. Pick. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm mad at Jobe because Jobe got hurt and wasn't striking people out before that. So he and I are not on speaking terms right now.
I'm sorry. That's my bad.
But yeah, no, I tend to agree. I mean, I think the fastball shape is he's probably going to have to go to more of a sinker than a four seamer. The numbers that I've seen, he hasn't really been riding it. Maybe there's something trunk tilt wise or rotational wise that they can fix that can maybe get him to boost that a little bit. But he's already got the velocity and enough spin that I think this all will kind of come together and turn into something. And as I said, I think the Pirates have been pretty good just in terms of their pitching development for a few years with a variety of types of arms and arsenals and handedness, etc. So he could be an interesting one, but I can understand why he might pass. Finally going to go in and have a conversation about Eli Willett's over 40 minutes into this podcast. But ended up going like number one overall. I understand it from a real life perspective. He's a really good all around player. I think, you know, if defense and all that sort of stuff mattered in fantasy, he might be ranked higher. But the track record with switch hitters that don't have a lot of power output, who aren't like 25 to 30 stolen base guys, isn't great. I don't know. I tend to be off of this profile a little bit, and he's kind of the end of this high school tier, high school shortstop tier, with Seth Hernandez factored in as well. What's your take on Willits? Like, I don't think it was a shock to us that he went 1-1. I could see people being higher on it. I just tend to be very much on the low side in terms of the power or speed projection with this guy.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it definitely wasn't a surprise to see him go first overall. That was it was a part of the conversation for some time before it actually happened. I liked the pick and have said this on other Baseball America podcasts. I liked the pick. I thought that it was, you know, going to get a lot of negative attention, but probably not for great reason. We're talking about an athletic guy with tools. From a fantasy perspective, I can very much understand the hesitancy, because I think that there's a world in which it takes quite some time, if it ever really happens, for a lot of this to come together in a way that's going to be productive. And I think that he's further away than some of the other guys who we've talked about in this same group. I think like Ethan Holliday is a little bit more of a ready-made player at this point than Eli Willits is. I think even guys like Steele Hall, maybe JoJo Parker, are also competitive as far as their readiness and proximity. And I think that that would make me think twice about drafting Eli Willits, but it would depend on the league that I'm in. And so I think it's kind of a, you know, two worlds here. In real life, I thought it was an interesting pick, and in fantasy, I'd be a little bit more hesitant.
That's kind of where I fall in the conversation. You know, it's not that he's a bad player. I just think it's kind of the quintessential sort of cliche in this space when we're talking prospects and draft, that he's a better real life player than a fantasy player. And that's not a knock on what he could be, or there might still be more upside. I think he's still getting drafted in probably every FYPD because he's a 1-1 pick. But you know, it's not a slam dunk type of 1-1 pick. I don't think that's the case. But still a very interesting player. Dylan, did you have any thoughts on the Eli Willits discussion?
Not really. I think, you know, as a model kind of focused guy, the fact he's the youngest is good. Like being 17 instead of 18 is like 10% boost to your peak generally. So like that's good. Gives them kind of a bit of more runway, a bit more of a cushion. So I like that. So it's kind of like the prevailing dialogue here is that it's a safe pick. Like maybe it's not the sexiest pick, but it's like kind of got the safest runway and cushion and floor. So I don't mind it at all. I think you're right. I think he's going to be going higher than 9 in a lot of FYPDs, just name value, 1-1, all that stuff. But if you're going by what the person may actually give you in a like a 3-year window, 5-year window, then, you know, this is probably more of the proper spot to put him.
Yeah. I just think there's a lot of question marks with him, and I'm okay. This is why I'm trying to help our readers navigate the draft a little bit. Stay away from this, you know. Last question I'll throw out here. I'm going to throw it over to Jacob and see what his thoughts are. How fast do you think Kyson Witherspoon could potentially move? We've seen Peyton Tolley has been in Double A for quite some time already. He made a great transformation in velocity, obviously being a full-time pitcher for the first year of his career, certainly had some help. Witherspoon is much more polished. The stuff is already actualized. It's plus stuff. He's got velocity. He's got power. He's got pitch shapes. He's got 4 different pitches. Can spin a breaking ball. He's a really good mover. Had performance. I feel like he's a guy that could move really quick, that he probably will start in High A Greenville, but there's a chance he could start in Double A Portland. He's kind of that advanced. I don't know if there's maybe a lot more upside coming. Just him learning how to navigate professional lineups, I think, is really the biggest question mark. So how quickly do you think he could move, Jacob?
Well, there's a lot of polish on this, and that to me is going to be the thing that is the rocket fuel here that gets him up reasonably quickly. Like you said, he does carry velocity really well deep into games. We saw multiple instances this year where he was over 100 pitches in a game and still touching 98, 99 with his fastball with good life. His slider, I think, is equally good as his fastball. So he does have an off-speed pitch. Beyond that, there are some concerns based on conversations that I had that he kind of tanks a little bit from a stuff standpoint. Like, it's the fastball and the slider that really clearly stand out. And then there's a massive gap between whatever you want to put next, whether that's the curveball or the changeup. But at the same time, you know, the control is good. There's room for him to improve his command. He's super athletic, like you just said. And just the overall maturity and competitiveness and like the makeup factors that, you know, I think absolutely come into play for arms and how fast they can rise up and, you know, get to contributing. I think that he checks those boxes. So, you know, from every conversation that I've had with area scouts and directors and other, you know, figures throughout baseball, there was a lot of very, very high praise for Kyson Witherspoon. And a lot of it had to do with the makeup and the polish. And even if there was some work to do with the secondaries, that he was somebody who really impressed people in the pre-draft process and throughout his draft year.
I really like the cutter, actually, which I know he started to throw more later in the year. I think it's a good pitch, like good cut shape, like has some horizontal and a little ride, 89, 90, 88, like in that range. It's not a bad pitch. You know, and he was zoning it a lot at a 71% strikeout rate on it. So I don't know. I think there's something here. And the Red Sox pitching development has been showing some signs that there might be something there as well. They've had a bunch of guys that took big step forwards over the last couple of years. So credit to them as well. All right, we're done talking the top 10. I kind of shared that with you. We went all the way to 100. The list is on the site. You can go and check that out. Before I let Jacob go and we wrap this sucker up, I'm going to throw the floor over to you. Do you have a player that we didn't talk about today that you are very excited about? Could be within the first round, could be somebody 60 picks down the board.
So to answer the question as specifically as possible that I'm very excited about, I jumped down to number 33 on your board as you've shared with me. And I think Cam Leiter is like the big ticket who people are going to sleep on in your FYPDs. He didn't pitch at all in his junior year due to a shoulder injury. There was some hope that maybe he would make an appearance over the summer before the draft. That didn't happen either. It was only a couple of private situations. And then he ended up with the Dodgers, which, you know, there's two ways to look at this. One, it's a team that is going to be able to really appreciate the stuff and maybe maximize it. On the other hand, for somebody who has an extensive injury history, maybe not the best organization right now to be a part of. But I'm super intrigued by him. I thought, and feel free to disagree with me, that if he had a healthy junior season and performed even decently, he would have been a surefire top 20 pick, because the stuff, just from a, like, we haven't seen it in a long time, but just his ability to throw the baseball is outstanding when he's healthy enough to do it. And I don't think there were a lot of guys in this staff that in this draft that have the combination of stuff that Cam Leiter had. So really complete pitcher if he's healthy, and he's in an organization that I think is going to take advantage of that. So that would be the guy that I would stash from the college ranks. As you get deeper into your drafts and see that he's still on the board, you can do what I did and you can draft him and feel good about yourself.
Yeah, I almost shoved him up even higher. I have him 33, and that's kind of just guarding the risk of the injury, and he may, you know, not be fully ready next year. It's totally possible. The upside is there, though. It's possible that, you know, like, he's behind who I think are the top four college righties, which are Witherspoon, Bremner, Gagewood, and Riley Quick from the Twins, who I like Quick, and I think the stuff is pretty interesting. And then on top of it, the Twins haven't been bad with the college pitching development. So yeah, I have him kind of in that top five of like the college righties. So I like him quite a bit. There's a bunch of names I'm going to write about, but I'm going to throw one a little bit further down the board here in James Quinn Irons, mid-major king out of George Mason. big physical athlete with really good athletic testing data and really good underlying data, like for, you know, swing decisions and bat to ball skills. So the plate skills are there. There's some power. The angles aren't bad. He's a really exciting player that I think is going to be free in a lot of drafts and really more of a deeper league name, but maybe one to throw on your watch list for like your last pick, maybe in a shallower league. Just depends. Maybe more like 300 prospect, 400 prospects rostered, but it's kind of the Joseph Sullivan of this year to throw a little comp on it. What do you want to say, Jacob?
I was going to say, for the fantasy fans who are listening to this and are going to go check out this list, the 85, let's say, to end 85 to 100 range is just full of guys who I think are super intriguing. Like that pocket right there would be my, hey, it's getting late and I have a couple picks left. I would look very strongly at this group of about 15 players, like just to rattle off a couple. JB Middleton stands out to me as somebody who I think maybe got underappreciated throughout the draft process. Malachi Witherspoon, for as much conversation as there's been about his brother, his raw stuff is outstanding. Tanner Franklin's got one of the best fastballs in this draft. A lot of people put a 7 on it. Cody Bowker is somebody who I've kind of got attached to at the end of the year. He's got a good changeup. I think he's a real chance to be a starter. Slider showed a lot of life late in the season. He's got a good fastball. And then the other one was number 88, Chase Shores. I was talking about him with the boss man, JJ Cooper. And he and I both think that that's somebody who could rise exceptionally quickly, just given the fact that he is now in the Angels organization and throws 103.
Yeah, I agree on all those. And I'd even throw Cade Obermuller, drafted by the Phillies, Iowa. Really interesting stuff, undersized left-hander. A lot of these guys are probably relievers, but still interesting nonetheless. And that's why they're on the back end of this list, because I wanted to make sure that I included them. Thank you for joining us today, Jacob. That was wonderful. I hope our listeners got a lot of perspective on these draft players and kind of, you have understanding of fantasy scoring and all that good stuff. So I think it was really, really helpful for Dylan, for Jeff, for Jacob, for Baseball America. This has been the Fantasy Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers.